elderly patient population is the fastest growing segment.
As we age, patients become more susceptible to infection.
Serum creatinine really should not be used.
Early and aggressive treatment, in fact, does make a difference.
My spidey sense is way high on those patients because I think that they just harbor badness. Be wary of that.
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Welcome to this podcast. Very excited about this particular topic. But before we jump into our education, let me introduce my amazing co-hosts, Dr. Peter W. and Dr. Rob Rodriguez. Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Doing great tonight, Mike.
Likewise, doing very well. Summer's winding down, unfortunately, but yeah, doing great.
It seems like it's definitely winding down, Rob. We're coming to the middle of August here, but I heard a quick fact on the radio today that actually there are now 47 days left, and we've gone through 47 days of summer. So we're right about, technically, about the midpoint, but I think many of us know that in just a few weeks, kids will be back in session, school will be back in session, and our respective hospitals will be gearing back up for fall meetings and initiatives. Well, as you can hear, we are missing John this month. John, on this podcast, he's out with some well-deserved family recreation time, but we're going to keep him here in spirit because John and one of the former Maryland graduates, Yoshi Mitarai, they just published an outstanding edition or issue of Emergency Medicine Clinics of North America, and the entire edition was dedicated to critical care in the emergency department, exactly what we focus on here at CCPEM. So congrats to John, congrats to Yoshi on a great edition. And one of those articles is going to serve the basis of what we're going to talk about during this podcast between Peter, Rob, and myself. And that is an article written that is entitled Resuscitating the Critically Ill Geriatric Emergency Department Patient. So definitely something we're seeing more of these days coming into our ED, populating our ICU. And they are very complex with some physiologic changes that we'll review, and there's some nice resus pearls that this article covers. So without further ado, let's jump into that topic for this month. No surprise in terms of background epidemiology that currently 15% of the U.S. population is over the age of 65 years. And we know that in the coming years, that percentage is projected to increase. So by 2030, patients or the U.S. population ages over 65 will account for 20 to 25%. The elderly patient population is the fastest growing segment of our population. And no surprise, these patients have a greater number of comorbidities. In fact, well over half, more than 60%, have at least two comorbidities or chronic conditions. In addition to that, they're on a greater number of medications. They are now accounting for at least 20% of ED visits, and they make up to 50% of hospital admissions. An important theme that you'll hear us talk about as we go through this particular podcast is that definitely even in the geriatric patient, importantly in the geriatric patient, early and aggressive treatment in fact does make a difference. And that unfortunately, in previous literature and even recent literature, we know that older patients may in fact be treated a little differently than younger patients. And that's primarily due, or it's cited to be due, to provider lack of knowledge in resuscitating the geriatric patient, comfort with resuscitating the older patient, and then in some cases, unfortunately, treatment bias. So before we touch on those resus pearls, let's go just through a few important age-related physiologic changes. Rob, I'm going to turn to you to cover our first few, and let's hit on some of these important things.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So among the biggest changes in terms of age-related physiologic changes are immune function changes. As we age, and especially in the elderly group, patients become more susceptible to infection, and they have a decreased ability to mount a response to infection. Also, notably, as we age, you have an increased likelihood of atypical presentations for infections, and that's an important pearl that we're going to talk about later. In other words, what we would otherwise see in terms of infection, like fever and tachycardia and certain other hallmarks that we look for, may not be as notable in the elderly population. So the decreases in immune function are widespread. There's decreased humoral immune function that leads to a greater susceptibility to viruses like influenza. And there's also decreased cellular immune function, T cell function as well. There are also a number of mechanical aspects of immune function that contribute to increased susceptibility to infections. Elderly patients have increased skin fragility and therefore can develop infections from minor trauma to the skin. They have decreased motility of their cilia in their lungs and in their nasal passages, which contribute to development of pneumonia and sinus infections. And also other mechanical aspects, elderly patients commonly will have indwelling hardware that can get infected as well. In terms of cognitive impairment, that's also obviously a big problem in the elderly population. Acute or chronic mental status change can affect up to 25% of those who present to the ED. And this creates a challenge in diagnosis and also just in terms of overall treatment plans. Delirium is, in fact, a sign of acute illness in the elderly, but it's often missed because we can attribute changes to things like dementia and not recognize delirium. Elderly patients also have impaired mobility and frailty. And frailty is defined as age-associated decline in physiologic reserves and impaired resistance to stressors. There's a strong correlation with frailty to illness and poor outcomes than age itself. In other words, like an older 80-year-old who is very mobile and very active and physiologically young is less likely to get critically ill than a 60-year-old who is otherwise frail. So frailty combined with impaired mobility increases the older adult's risk of falls and trauma and leads to worsened outcomes in the setting of acute illness. In terms of respiratory physiology, there are a number of changes that occur with age, including increased chest wall rigidity, kyphosis, decreased respiratory muscle strength, and decreased elastic recoil of the lung, which leads to decreased vital capacity. Elderly are also more likely to have underlying lung disease such as fibrosis, scarring, and COPD. And additionally, pretty much all elderly patients develop decreased mucociliary clearance over time, and this can contribute to problems like decreased diffusion capacity, increased VQ mismatch, and decreased cough protective mechanisms. So overall, the elderly patient is notable to have decreased pulmonary reserve and an increased risk of hypoxia and hypercarbia, which can lead to respiratory failure and a number of other problems in this population. So, Peter, what about other physiologic changes that occur in the elderly?
Well, Rob, in addition to the changes in our respiratory physiology, there's some cardiovascular physiology that takes a beating as well. And so we know as we age, there's progressive stiffening of both the arterial vasculature as well as the myocardium itself. And this really does lead to higher baseline blood pressures and more precipitous drop in blood pressure when our patients are exposed to a stressor. We know that this stiffening of the myocardium results in increased incidence of diastolic dysfunction and a decreased cardiac output from myocardial stiffening. And so that's the cardiovascular picture, if you will. So think about it as elevations in blood pressure that doesn't handle stressors so well, and a stiff left heart. When we move on and we talk about what happens to the renal system, I think this is really important. Both kidney mass and the number of glomeruli decrease with age. This leads to decreased renal function and a decreased ability to retain sodium and water. Now, an important learning point is that serum creatinine really should not be used to estimate renal function in the elderly. And the reason why is because creatinine typically decreases with age in the setting of a lower lean body mass and in the malnourished elderly patient. So again, as you have wasting and muscle wasting, creatinine is less able to give you a clear picture on renal dysfunction. And it's really prudent to calculate the creatinine clearance to determine overall renal function as opposed to just creatinine. Next is pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics, you know, how we have to deal with our meds in this patient population. And in the elderly, responses to medications change with aging as well. And so total body weight and circulating protein levels decrease, but total body fat concentration increases. This is linked to the loss of muscle mass. This alters the volume of distribution and total plasma levels of hydrophilic and lipophilic and highly protein-bound medications. And this is important to take into account the physiologic decrease in renal function and how that plays in to the pharmacodynamics of a lot of our meds. Now I'm going to turn it over to Mike for clinical manifestations, Mike.
You guys did an outstanding job, and I think I'm amazed at how many changes actually are occurring in our older patients and how it may impact not only our ED evaluation along with management. So really quick for me, what I'm taking home from what you guys just did an outstanding job talking about is that their increased susceptibility to infection, decreased ability to mount response to infection, and more likely to have atypical presentations of critical illness. Pay attention to delirium because that's a sign of acute illness. They're more likely to suffer even minor trauma. They have decreased pulmonary reserve with an increased risk of hypoxia and hypercarbia, a more precipitous drop in blood pressure when they're stressed by any illness. Pay attention to kidney function and look at the creatinine clearance and not the serum creatinine. And then pay attention to medications because of their alterations in the volume of distribution. Some key pearls that you guys just went over. Now, in terms of taking all of that to the bedside, what can we take away when we're faced with a critically ill geriatric patient or someone who we're thinking may have critical illness? From a physical exam standpoint, two key areas that this article focused on were vital signs along with skin. So because of those physiologic changes in the elderly, it's recommended, while it's not currently evidence-based, but many would recommend utilizing different thresholds for the definition of tachycardia, hypotension, and fever in the older patient. Now, in terms of tachycardia, we're used to thinking about it with a heart rate greater than 100 beats per minute, but in the older or elderly patient, really considering tachycardia when the heart rate is greater than 90 beats per minute. In terms of the blood pressure, so typically we would rattle off systolic blood pressure less than 90, MAP of less than 65, elevate that a little bit in the older or elderly patient and really consider them to be hypotensive when the systolic blood pressure is less than 100 or it has decreased by more than 40 from the patient's baseline if you have access to their baseline measurements. And then finally, from a temperature standpoint, considering fever when you've measured an oral temperature greater than or equal to 37.2 Celsius, or if you check it rectally, greater than 37.5 Celsius. So some key alterations and considerations for those vital sign abnormalities. Now, in and of itself, if you took a look at just one vital sign that could be the most sensitive for critical illness, not only in older but also in younger patients, and that is tachypnea. So when it's truly measured in the patient's tachypneic, really pay attention to that because that's a very sensitive sign for critical illness. And then finally, under physical exam, in terms of the skin exam, there's a little bit more emphasis now in light of the Andromeda shock trial that we reviewed a few podcasts ago, looking at cap refill time. Well, in the older or elderly patient, normal capillary refill time is going to be longer than in our younger patients. So take that into account. And then looking at classic signs of dehydration or hydration status. So skin turgor, mucous membranes, axillary moisture, all of that is really going to be unreliable in an older or elderly patient trying to get some gauge of their hydration status. So vital sign changes and then skin changes, pay attention to. And then in terms of their clinical manifestations, once again, to circle back to medications, take a look at their med list because up to 10% of admissions to the hospital for elderly patients are as a result of adverse drug events. It's actually the leading cause of hospitalization and death in the older patient. So pay attention to that medication list. Now, Peter, I'm going to throw things back to you. We're confronted with a sick patient, and now we really have to resuscitate this geriatric patient. Give me some airway along with RSI pearls.
So when we start thinking about airway in the elderly patient, there's a number of anatomic changes that occur normally with aging. One of those is diminished or decreased neck mobility. This is probably more pronounced in those with rheumatoid arthritis and creates a problem for us there. There's an increased incidence of nasal polyps, so nasal airways could be difficult placement there. And there's typically atrophy of the orbicularis oris muscle, and so there tends to be more difficulty with placing bag valve mask there. There's often dental decay, loose dentition, and edentulous patients. So everything from knocking off teeth with normal, direct, and indirect laryngoscopy to difficulty with bag valve mask ventilations. There's often TMJ stiffness and limited mouth opening. There is typically with aging decreased thyromental distance, so it makes the airway more anterior in appearance. There's also a decreased submandibular compliance. There's increased parapharyngeal fat and a floppy epiglottis. So it makes it more likely that the airway wants to implode on itself. But most notable is the tendency of the airway to collapse and be obstructed. And so we need to make sure that, and snoring increases with age as well. So that makes sense. All of this is going to make bag valve mask ventilation that much more difficult. So placement of nasal airways and oral airways should be a ready adjunct at the bedside for the elderly. And then when we shift from airway just to RSI, we have to remember that our geriatric patients should be adequately pre-oxygenated. So don't assume that 100% SATs are enough. Use that 100% non-rebreather or use vital capacity breathing to get a good washout of nitrogen so we can build up oxygen reserves and use your nasal cannula at flush level during RSI. Given difficulty in maintaining a seal, again, bag valve mask should be a two-person technique. Leave dentures in place during bag valve mask ventilation to allow for a better seal for these patients. Please use caution when positioning the geriatric patient for intubation. This, again, is linked to what I mentioned before, which is limited neck mobility, and again, especially in those patients with rheumatoid arthritis. And then just a reminder that patients are more likely to sustain peri-intubation hypotension, and we've talked about that before, during RSI and using shock index as an early marker for that as well. Consider reducing the dose of sedatives, particularly if you're going to use something like a benzodiazepine or a fentanyl or a propofol. Those things will drop the blood pressure a bit more, and anticipate the need for IV fluids and possibly pressors. So have those ready to go at the bedside, and no real need to adjust the dose of your neuromuscular blocking agents. So I think those are the typical things for airway and RSI. But Rob, could you tell us a little bit more about what we're going to do once they're intubated?
Yeah. So in terms of mechanical ventilation, there are currently no specific clinical guidelines focused on mechanical ventilation of the elderly patient. So in general, the recommendations are to use low tidal volume strategies similar to those that you would use in younger patients. However, you've got to remember that elderly patients have, as we described before, decreased pulmonary reserve, decreased respiratory muscle strength, and decreased lung compliance. And so you therefore have to adjust your mechanical ventilation plan accordingly. In terms of the lower pulmonary reserve, you have to consider this when you're considering plans to intubate a patient, and also in terms of weaning and extubating patients. You got to remember that these patients will not be as robust as your younger patient in terms of maintaining their ability to ventilate. In terms of circulation, recall that these patients are at high risk of cardiac decompensation. They have a lower physiologic reserve. They have a higher incidence of coronary artery disease and a higher incidence of CHF. So therefore, at increased risk of volume overload, CHF, and organ failure with excessive fluid administration. So you really should consider smaller fluid boluses in these patients, followed by more frequent reassessments of tissue perfusion. In terms of vasopressors, you can in general sort of follow similar guidelines that you would use in younger patients, with a notable caveat that elderly patients often have longstanding hypertension. You should consider adjusting your target MAP goal to a little higher than you otherwise would normally target. So instead of targeting 60 or 65 for your MAP, you might consider targeting 70, 75, or even 80 for patients who have had longstanding hypertension. In terms of medications, recall those drug interactions and be aware that elderly patients can be very sensitive to the effects of medications, such that smaller doses of, let's say, sedatives or other medications are probably indicated instead of hitting them really hard immediately with large doses of sedatives or agents that act on blood pressure. You should consider using smaller doses and frequent reassessments. And then you also must consider, as Peter mentioned, the issues in terms of renal clearance of medications and as well as hepatic function. So you have to be adjusting these medications to their creatinine clearance.
Peter and Rob, those were simply outstanding recess pearls from airway RSI, mechanical vent, circulatory, and medication management. Well, as we come down the home stretch and wrap up this podcast, let's just touch on two specific scenarios, and that is sepsis and trauma. Now, in terms of sepsis, the reason we want to bring that up is because when you take a look at the literature, older patients, they account for more than 50% of the patients we see in the ED with sepsis. And as we've talked about with that immunosenescence, they have a decreased ability to mount a response to infection, which makes it much more difficult to make the diagnosis of sepsis. Furthermore, those that end up having bacteremia, we know that up to a third will be afebrile in terms of their presentation. More often, they're going to have atypical presentation. So beware of the elderly patient who comes in confused, failure to thrive, they report generalized weakness, or the family is reporting simply that they have an overall decreased functional status. Don't rely on a white count to clue you in that they may be infected or have sepsis. That's been shown to be insensitive for bacteremia in the elderly. So cast a wide net. Have a clinical suspicion for sepsis, really look them over from a physical exam point, from head to toe, looking for any indwelling catheters, lines, Foley catheters, any decubitus ulcers that may be infected. Consider use of lactate. And then in terms of your diagnostic studies, when you're casting that wide net, just be mindful that a chest x-ray may in fact be less sensitive and specific due to the presence of comorbidities in that patient along with relative volume depletion. So we're not definitely advocating gross overutilization of CT, but in the older patient who you have this suspicion of sepsis and a non-diagnostic plain film, really have a low threshold to do CT of perhaps the chest or even the abdomen and pelvis looking for an intra-abdominal source of infection. Management principles are pretty much the same. If they're febrile, give them an antipyretic. Rob already mentioned with fluid resuscitation, we don't want to emphasize that we under-resuscitate the older patient, so we're still shooting for the appropriate amount, simply giving them in smaller fluid boluses followed by much more frequent reassessment perhaps than in a younger individual. Rob touched on how to dose vasoactive medications. That's a great pearl in terms of those with longstanding hypertension and considering targeting a higher MAP. And then with your antibiotics, consider broad spectrum antibiotics, really thinking, is this older patient, especially if they're a resident of a long-term care facility or nursing home, at risk of multi-drug resistant organisms? Think about your local resistance pattern, antibiograms, and then when you give that antibiotic, even though we've touched on renal function, impaired renal function, and the effects of medications, that first dose of an antimicrobial is at a standard dose, and then subsequent doses are adjusted for the patient's creatinine clearance. Peter, let me turn to you for our final scenario to bring things home. Any pearls on evaluating the geriatric patient presenting in the setting of trauma?
Yes, there's a big push, even by ASAP, to qualify emergency departments as geriatric centers. And one of the reasons is trauma. And we know that when we're evaluating these patients, we know that falls are the most common mechanism of trauma in the older patient. Rib fractures are associated with a very high morbidity and mortality. Our older patients are more likely to have complications such as pneumothorax, hemothorax, and pulmonary contusions. Rob already talked to us before about how the pulmonary physiology is far more complicated and riskier for that patient population. So be wary of that. Pelvic fractures carry a really high rate of mortality in the older adults. They have a higher risk of hemorrhage than their younger cohort, and their increased need for angiography and blood products in these patients. Injury severity scores, or low glasgow coma scale should not be used as a sole indicator of critical illness, as older patients with low injury severity scores and high GCS can still have very significant illness and mortality. So don't be dissuaded by normal or lowish scores on either one of those. And then management, aggressive resuscitation should be directed by the vital signs and lactate measures. And, you know, some have really suggested a systolic blood pressure of 110 as a threshold for aggressive resuscitation in the elderly population. However, that's yet to be studied. Limit the crystalloids as you would in younger patients to really prevent any kind of dilutional coagulopathy. And then permissive hypotension has not proven safe or effective in older patients. So we may get away with that in our younger patients who have better cardiopulmonary reserve, but not so in the elderly patient. And then consider our massive transfusion protocols in older patients according to the same guidelines that we use for younger patients. Age is not an independent risk factor for death and should not be used to implement a restricted resuscitation strategy when we're talking about blood products.
Outstanding, Peter. Guys, this has been a really super helpful podcast. We know that the elderly are the fastest growing segment of our population. They've got tremendous physiologic changes that impact their overall clinical presentation of illness. And we went over some really nice take-home bedside resus pearls from a variety of organ systems and then covering sepsis and trauma. Let me ask, as we wrap up our podcast here, Rob and then Peter, do you have any final pearls that we didn't talk about or things that you want to overemphasize in taking care of the critically ill geriatric patient?
Yeah, I'm particularly nervous about the elderly patient with either a Parkinson's disease or another neurological disease, Alzheimer's, who can't communicate with me. My spidey sense is way high on those patients because I think that they just harbor badness and are at profound risk for us.
Great point. Rob, final pearl?
Yeah, I think, you know, this was a pretty broad, comprehensive talk. I think the points that I would like to reemphasize are the points about the vital signs and the white count and other traditional things that we see in the younger patient population. Over time, I'm more and more impressed by how subclinically these elderly patients can present and have an overwhelming infection. So you really cast a broad net. You got to have a high index of suspicion, especially with anybody who has altered mental status and that elevated respiratory rate. That's a really solid pearl. So again, just having a higher index of suspicion and for illness and for aggressive treatment in these patients.
Great way to wrap up an outstanding podcast. Our congrats again to our CCPEM co-host, John Greenwood and Tsuyoshi Mitarai, for their edition for EM Clinics of North America, just published in August of this month, so hot off the press for critical care in the emergency department. And our congrats also to Dr. Danya Koja, who is the lead author on this particular article that we use for this podcast, and that is Resuscitating the Critically Ill Geriatric Emergency Department Patient. As always, if you have any questions for us regarding things that we discussed during this podcast, shoot us an email through the website. Enjoyed doing this podcast with Peter and Rob. Looking forward to upcoming podcasts here on CCPEM. I know John is going to interview a few other authors in this particular EM Clinics of North America edition. And in the upcoming one or two podcasts, we're going to go over the recent article from JAMA Open Network on ED ICUs and their impact on resource utilization and ultimately on patient outcomes. So great content to come. Looking forward to talking with you all on our next podcast. Once again, I'm Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. We will talk to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.